This is the Beer of the Day podcast.
You guys ready for part two?
Let's do it.
From Beer of the Day World Headquarters in Elk Grove, California. It's the Beer of the Day podcast. It's been a week since our last episode, but by the miracles of the Beer of the Day time machine, it's only been 10 minutes for us. And we're moving into the second half of our Recap the Midwest Trip show. In our first episode, we recapped our visit to Minnesota, Iowa, and Wisconsin. On today's episode, we're completing the journey through Illinois, Indiana, and Britton and Joel's trip to Cincinnati, Ohio. I'm Dallas Helliker. Joining me tonight, Britton Miner, Joel Miner, Steve Williamson, Jeff Miller, Hugo Padilla, and Lance Burks. Whew! Barely got it in there.
Long time no see, guys.
Good afternoon. Good evening.
Steve stole my joke.
You guys are looking better today.
Thank you. We're just refreshed.
You just have drink since the last episode.
Minute by minute.
Dallas is wearing beer goggles.
The beers from the previous episode have kicked in at this point.
I feel great.
So we moved on from Wisconsin and drove down to Illinois. We drove past Illinois, Chicago, down to Indiana, but first we're going to try a beer that we have in the Beer of the Day vault from Alton, Illinois. This is the Old Bakery Beer Company, the Citrus Wheat Beer.
This makes me curious as to the name of the brewing company. Was it an old bakery, or did they used to bake and now they make beer? The story there. That's what I want to know.
Well, maybe we can find out. There's a lot of writing on the can, so after Joel's done pouring, he can read the can.
Excellent.
Starting off nice and light here. This is a pretty hazy color, like a golden yellow, golden orange.
It's kind of been the theme of these Midwest beers so far. They all have kind of a similar yellow lemonade-y look kind of to them.
I just want to point out that the can is beautiful, first of all, and the beer color matches the yellow color that's on the bottom half of the can. Almost perfectly.
I could see that.
There you go.
So the aroma here is pretty interesting. Like, it's weedy and like floral. I mean, it smells very interesting and unique for this beer.
It's an aroma that it reminds me of something from my childhood, but I cannot put my fingers on it.
It reminds me of a sour lemon cookie.
It smells like chamomile tea with a lemon wedge.
Yeah, okay.
I think you're right.
It's pretty good.
Very herbal,
but there's a lot of sweetness though too in the nose.
It's got a super fine head. Like, it's very thin, but the bubbles are incredibly small. And what I have is probably like maybe a finger, and it's just sticking around.
Does anybody else get like ginger on this?
A little bit. That's what I was thinking in the aroma, but I think it's chamomile, but I think I also get some ginger.
Well, the can says coriander, and once it said that, I was like, oh, that's kind of the flavor that I'm getting out of it.
Yeah, it could be that. It is kind of a more herbal coriander, though. Like, sometimes coriander is always paired with those very orangey type of wheat beers. This isn't that. You do get the wheat, it's not super orange.
You get some lavender or something in there. It's strange.
I was going to say lavender as well. And just
it's like a potpourri of, I don't know, it's kind of like a Hefeweizen, but like with a lot more floral and herbal flavors to it.
And this is really a very complex beer. It's probably more complex than a lot of the strange beers that we have. And when I say complex, I'm just getting a lot of different flavors that I'm not normally getting in beers that I have.
On my third sip, I'm getting, it's very light mouthfeel, a little bit watery on the aftertaste. It's not really lingering around too much. You do get that punch of herbal type of spices, and then it just dissipates very quickly.
I almost think they forgot to put the beer in here. Like, I don't get any, like, there's like no hops or malt to me at all. I'm like, you know, try to pick out a malt profile, try to pick out a hop profile. It just tastes like potpourri was liquefied.
I like, we're laughing, but I think Steve's dead on. I think that it really does just taste like not a beer at all.
But it's, you got to look at what they're going for here. I mean, this is a summertime mowing your grass type of beer. It's very light. It's almost like a shandy in a little way.
It's like a lemon square.
Yeah. Oh, lemon bar, maybe?
Yeah.
Lemon
yeah,
bar?
Yeah.
It's what they want this beer to be. It's not something most of us are going to drink and enjoy, but it's what some people enjoy. It's 4.7%. It's a light beer to start out the show.
Yeah, and it's organic, and it says, please recycle on the can 6 times, so I'm going to recycle this.
Okay, so the organic thing is interesting, because we have had discussions about this, about does organic make it beer better or worse as far as flavor-wise?
It's completely irrelevant.
I agree. It's just going through the certification and buying your product from a certified organic producer.
Strictly means the amount of pesticide that was used in the growing process of the plants.
Not to, well, and to Joel's point, though, well, I know this is the case for coffee. I don't know if it's the same for breweries, but a lot of coffee is also organic. It's just not certified organic because the process to be certified is like insane. So a lot of people don't do it. So to your point, I think it's irrelevant.
I will tell you that I'm glad it's organic and not gluten-free, because if anybody out there has had a gluten-free beer and enjoyed it, then you're, something's wrong with you. You need to go get your head checked.
So this beer is
it was very judgy. Sorry.
It's from Alton, Illinois, which is just north across the border from St. Louis, Missouri. So this is a almost a Missouri beer, very close. So this is the southern edge of Illinois. We didn't make it down there to this brewery, but we did have plenty of Chicago beers, which we'll get to. But first, when we were driving down from Madison, we went across the state line to Indiana, Munster, Indiana, where Hugo's people are from.
Shout out to all the Gills out there.
And we went to a very famous brewery. Everyone's heard of them. Three Floyds.
Who?
I haven't heard of them.
Well, now you have. And we have the Zombie Dust Pale Ale.
So I'm excited to try this beer because, like Dallas said, it's a very popular brewery. One of the things that I do in my spare time is I brew at home, and this is one of the most popular recipes for home brewery is the Zombie Dust. People try to mimic this beer, and there are a ton of recipes online. So I'm just excited because of how many times I've come across this recipe to actually try it from the brewer. So yeah, here goes.
So we walked into this place. They had their big festival the following day, right? What's the name of that?
Dark Lord.
Dark Lord. So they had about 600 porta potties and lined up around everywhere, and about enough parking to, I don't know. It was an incredibly large event they were planning for. So
I think they were bringing about 6,000 people for this event. They do it once a year. Kind of like Cigar City's Hop Ohana. Once a year, they release this beer. Big festival. Everybody comes out. A little bit busy. Didn't talk to us too much.
Yeah, they were. You could tell they were all like rushing around and getting ready for the event, and they didn't really have much time for us. So we didn't get the royal treatment here, but they at least took our order.
Can you not say the same for other breweries? Did you go to any where they didn't take your order?
The one that closed at 6?
None that I can recall.
Well, Ballast Point did not honor our request for one of everything. So that qualifies.
Jerks.
Man, they're never going to hear the end of it. One guy 2 years ago declines to serve us beer, and that's it. We've mentioned it like 20 times.
Well, you know what? We went to Bottle Logic, and we asked for one of everything, and they looked at us sideways for 2 seconds, and then we're like, yeah, we can do that.
Well, that's okay.
So this beer, Zombie Dust, is, like you said, one of their most famous beers, but I think Alpha King is probably their flagship beer. But Zombie Dust, I think, has gotten a lot more notoriety the last couple of years. This is a, it's not clear, but it's not opaque. It's kind of a golden yellow color also with a pretty sizable foamy head, off-white.
And it's fresh. This was bottled on May 10th, so it's less than 2 weeks old.
Wow.
Yeah, we got this like a day or two after it was bottled. Super fresh.
Was that one of the ones that Hugo dropped in the parking lot?
It may have been. I got a little bit of a soggy six pack and all my beers came tumbling, but luckily the guys there replaced them for me. So,
did you cry? I probably would have cried.
I did a little bit. And everybody on the parking lot poked fun at me. As they said, there was 6,000 people coming there, so quite a bit of people saw me drop my beers.
He's like, literally walking out of the place, and all of a sudden, six beers just fall out of the bottom of his six-pack, and he screamed and yelled. And
I feel like that's the adult version of a kid losing his balloon.
He got sympathy from everyone around, and they did replace the beers for free.
That's so awesome. That's really good.
Yeah. We can't say that's never happened at the Beer Day headquarters before.
Reminded me of when I was a kid and I dropped my cone on the floor.
Yeah.
I was that sad.
I had the same thing happen here where I was moving a Stone to go IPA, but the counter was wet and I was bringing it out to the fridge and the bottom dropped out and six beers exploded on the tile floor here. Oh, God, it was a mess.
I think you posted a picture of the carnage. It was pretty impressive.
I posted it on the Beer of the Day Twitter feed, but this was like maybe a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
But I think the hallway still smells like beer if you listen to it.
We're going to cut this out of the show, but one time we dropped a whole bottle of liquor here, a 1.5 liter of liquor, and then we actually saved it and siphoned it through like a coffee strain drank that shit.
Because it was my birthday present.
It was like $90 bottle of something, there's scotch or something.
Yeah.
Yes.
We drank it though.
Yeah, we did.
You remember that?
I don't.
Were you there? I don't know if you were here or not. That happened.
There was only a few glass shards in it when we drank it.
Glass shards in it.
We saved about 40% of it. Anyways.
Little floor dirt makes everything nice.
All right. So have we talked about this beer at all?
Nope. Color and pour.
We got an orangish copper color. Not too thick of a head here. It's reserved, but you know the lacing is really good on the side of the glass. I get a slight hop aroma, a little caramel malt, and a little orange to it too. A little orange fruit.
And those of you who are fans of Citra hops, that's the smell you're getting. We're getting a lot of Citra hops.
So the first taste, I can understand why this might be a very popular homebrew recipe. You guys all know that I'm not a huge IPA drinker, and I think this beer is delicious.
It's a pale ale.
Oh, it's a pale ale? Oh, maybe that's why I like it better. But it's really good.
Interesting on this trip is most of the well-known beers at a lot of the breweries we went to are pale ales. We're used to finding like IPAs as the flagship beer, but it's mostly pale ales almost everywhere we went on this trip. And this is a good representation. I mean, this is... It's an extremely well-balanced beer. It's not really, I can't call it a West Coast style. It's not too malty either. It's just very well-balanced. And this is what I like flavor-wise in a pale ale.
Even to build on that, I would call it remarkably smooth. I mean, it's so smooth that, there's no problem. You could chug this beer down.
To Jeff's point, the first thing that I wrote down is that it's very well balanced. There is a sweetness there, but it's balanced by a nice hot bitterness that makes it just very enjoyable. And to Steve's point, it's just really smooth. I could drink this all day long.
So let's talk about pales. You got to compare this to Sierra Nevada. Sierra Nevada pale ale is, I think, the pale ale that everything is compared to on the West Coast. And I think it stacks up extremely well.
I actually like this better.
If this is Citra hop and Sierra Nevada pale is Cascade, so there's going to be differences there. Sierra Nevada has a very prominent malt backbone kind of taste that all their beers have, and since I'm not used to Three Floyds, I don't know what their malt all their beers taste like. I don't have that frame of reference, but I do think it's very well balanced and really good flavor. And I was at Three Floyds and we were ordering beers there, I was at the point in the trip where I had been to, you know, 15 breweries in 3 days.
Oh my God.
And I was about done with beer at that point. So I was kind of sipping and not really drinking full pours of anything and not really enjoying beer at that point. Now I can taste this and say definitely very enjoyable.
Yeah, I'm not, I wouldn't say that I hate pale ales, but, you know, it's not the style of beer that I gravitate towards, but I can easily see myself drinking a six pack of this by the pool when we're having a party. And that's not, you know, normally what I would drink if I'm having a party. It's good.
Yeah. Yesterday we had a pool party at Britton and Joel's house and the Tavour package came in for Joel and he had unpacked a bunch of the beers and put them in the ice chest. So we had a bunch of random beers from all over the place yesterday. And this would have fit right in with it. I think this would have been
it's very good.
Really stacked up there with all the good beers that we had.
I wish I had a picture of Joel's face when he realized that his Tavour package came in. It was like kid in a candy store times five. It was like the most, it's the most excited I've ever seen him look in my life.
So the way, you know, you said it, Dallas, you know, you stack everything up to Sierra Nevada. So when I compare this to Sierra Nevada, it doesn't have the bread and wheat profile you get a lot with Sierra Nevada. You know, Sierra Nevada is very wheaty in a good way, but we're used to that bread taste. This is less dry and it's a little bit more sweet than Sierra Nevada.
I just had Sierra Nevada Pale Ale not that long ago, which is very unusual for me.
I had it yesterday.
But I just drank one. I like this better because, to Joel's point, it's more sweet. And I think that Sierra Nevada Pale Ale also has a little bit of like that coppery metallic flavor to it that is kind of like the trademark of all Sierra Nevada beers. But
that,
yeah.
That rusty malt flavor.
Yeah.
And one of the things I like about this beer is it has that very slight caramel taste. And I mean, it's barely there and I really like it.
For sure.
But that's the sweetness. I mean, I agree. Like the caramel sweetness makes this beer unique among pale ales.
Yep.
But also the copper ale used to be a thing that I love. I loved copper ales and you don't see them anymore and no one brands themselves as that anymore, but I do get some of those qualities with this and I enjoy that. So there's a lot I enjoy about this beer. So it's been a few weeks since we've done a podcast, and this came out right as the last podcast came out, and we didn't get to include it in the show, but it's worth mentioning. AB InBev has struck again. Wicked Weed Brewing in Asheville, North Carolina, which is one of the up-and-comers there, big brewery there, got bought out by Anheuser-Busch, and it caused a riptide whirlpool effect of all kinds of drama in the craft beer industry. So that was one big one. I think maybe the same day or the day before, Heineken and Lagunitas announced that Heineken was purchasing the remaining 50% interest in Lagunitas. So now Lagunitas is completely owned by Heineken. Lagunitas is retaining its own entity as a company within Heineken, so they're still autonomous, but it was pretty crazy. Like when Lagunitas sold 50% of their brewery, Tony McGee, the owner of Lagunitas, said, well, you know, we had to do this for our investors and for the company, and you know, it's good for the company because we're gonna have all of Lagunitas' distribution, but we're not selling 51%, we're selling 50%.
Weren't they the first $1 billion deal? Do I remember that right? Half a billion.
So this is the other half a billion that the other shoe fell. But all the spin that he put out back then, and I bought it and I was defending it. And now, you know, it's all Heineken now.
A lot of money.
Man, so I think that I probably come from a different place than a lot of other people about these deals. I think that the pitchforks came out and were at the ready for both of these deals. And I don't really care as long as the beer is still good. If the beer suffers, that's when I have a problem with it. Like, oh, okay, like big beer's coming in. Now, I know that there are other factors at play, especially like they've been highlighting that, you know, AB InBev or whatever tries to dominate the hops and...
They dominate the distribution, the shelf space.
Yeah, I do have a problem with that.
Big beer does everything they can to prevent the encroachment and to deter craft beer from gaining a foothold.
They're fighting for their survival. I mean, that's, you know,
they're fighting for their survival, but they're the big Goliath, yeah, right. I'll call them. And so
they have the purchasing power.
So I'm on the side of the little guy, and I was at the bar the day that this came out, and I saw on the board, up on the board, they had the brand new Born Yesterday, may have been a couple of days old, fresh Born Lagunitas Born Yesterday, and I wanted to order it, and I didn't order it. I got a field work or something else.
Well,
so I'm doing my part, craft beer.
I have other news that I don't know if you guys have heard, and this might break Joel's heart, but did you hear what came out yesterday?
The brewery is selling a major stake to a private equity firm.
Yep, the brewery in Placentia.
Jeez. Yep, I read that yesterday too.
The hoity-toity of beer drinkers.
You know, and I feel better about that. Like when a brewery partners, I mean, they use the word partners, and you know, I want to think it's not selling out, but they're partnering with a private equity firm. I am much more okay with that than selling to AB InBev, Miller Coors, something like that. But it's still, I mean, it's
that's concerning. This
is it's a company that is trying to survive and make money, and hopefully it doesn't make things worse. You know, hopefully they keep the same beer quality. But yeah, the brewery wants to keep growing and expand, and so they're partnering with this private equity firm, and that's how they feel they have to do it.
I think
so.
It'd be great if they don't have to charge $15 to $20 a bottle anymore. That'd be a good move.
Probably cost more.
Speaking of which, I just paid for a $30 bottle with a collab between brewery and Three Floyds.
Yep.
Oh wow.
Who let us know if that's
good? This is a side note. Sorry, dear.
No, go for it.
As a side note, Costco had rye on rye on rye, and they were selling out of it, and it was $6 a bottle for rye on rye on rye.
Ooh, that's cheap.
I saw that for $19 the other day.
I bought four of them.
You bought four.
That's a one and done, ladies and gentlemen.
McGee, 57, explained his thoughts in a rambling blog post in which he also noted that he still successfully wakes and bakes most days with marijuana. I had a strong sense from the start that we would find a way to play a larger role with Heineken. They are calmly aware that they are not able to do the things that we do easily, that small brewing has a destiny in the world, and they want and even need to be a part of it. And I am aware that they can easily do things in the world at large that we cannot do at all either. So basically he wants to bring Lagunitas IPA to Africa and everywhere else in the world. And I guess with Heineken paying him $1 billion, that they'll be able to do that. Once I find my agenda, we'll move into the next beer of the day. Okay, so the trip continued. We went down to Munster, Three Floyds, hung out there for a bit. We drove back up north. We saw Chicago. We saw the Sears Tower and the Hancock Building on the horizon growing bigger and bigger as we headed north. And then we were in the downtown Chicago. And first we went to Pipeworks, but we're changing the order here a little bit. We're going to talk about Half Acre first. And Half Acre was we took an Uber up there from our hotel. The Uber driver was playing the pop hits of the day. I learned some Taylor Swift songs and some other ones I hadn't heard before. And we finally arrived at Half Acre. And this place was something else.
It was the loudest brewery you've ever been to in terms of music level, noise level?
Yeah. So like the street was under construction. There was like dust and stuff. And we'd get dropped off. And there's like a door. And we open the door. And you walk into the gift shop where they sell beer. They have a small little bar for tasting, and it was very quiet, but you can hear something in the background. You don't know what it is. So then we go outside, go next door into the brewery, and this place is punk rock loud. Like, it is really loud. Just for some reason, the acoustics of the room amplify people's voices. So the music is loud, but the people's voices are very loud. And it was just a ruckus atmosphere. And they're having a good, everyone in the place is having a good time. We happened to find a place at the edge of the bar. Two people happened to leave. So then we sat down and ordered some beers. And it was a really good experience, really fun time at a Chicago brewery.
Yeah, one of the, I mean, loud, but one of the most lively breweries I've ever been to. And the, you know, the, everybody working there was super friendly. Everybody there was friendly. And we had a great time. We were there for a couple hours. Had every beer that they have.
They have so many workers that running around, everyone's doing something, and the bar is not that big, but I've never seen like eight people working one small bar, and they all just move around each other, no problem. It's like they're used to it, but it was a feat for sure. So we brought back a couple different beers. The one we're going to have on the show today is Daisy Cutter Pale Ale.
And this is also their flagship. Like I mentioned, a pale ale. This is the beer that put them on the map. It's very well known in the craft beer community. I had never had it before this trip. Maybe somebody else has had it before, but it's well known. One of those beers, probably, you know, like Joel said, that people try to make, you know, homebrewers copy this recipe. So I'm looking forward to this because we had it on tap. But they also have this on in cans at a lot of like bars around Chicago. I mean, it's pretty readily available around Chicago.
I think we caught them on a pretty busy weekend because they also had the double pale ale, the Galaxy Hops version of this that they had a can release for while we were there.
Could you say that again? Double pale ale?
Double pale ale, yes. Not double IPA, but double pale ale with Galaxy Hops.
So it's a pretty clear color. Fairly light golden color with a super white, kind of filmy head.
Thick, pretty thick.
Yeah, very thick.
Foamy, small bubbles. When I'm looking at the beer after it's sat for a while, just a couple of little bubbles. It seems lightly carbonated, but if I shake it a little bit and swirl it, then those champagne-like bubbles start floating up. I get a kind of a sweet aroma. Maybe caramel.
It's a nice bread, bready smell to it. Probably going to get some sweetness out of this one.
Like a sweet bread, maybe, is the aroma.
Sweet bread is intestines.
Cinnabon.
Super smooth. I mean, I like this. It's not overly hoppy. It's got a nice, like the bready malts. I don't think it's very sweet. It's just a pretty well-balanced pale ale. I mean, this is your classic high-quality tasty pale ale, but not overly hoppy.
Yeah, I definitely expected more sweetness with the aroma, but on the taste, it's not really there. It's just, it's nicely balanced.
I think that it's a little less balanced than what you guys are describing, and that's, I'm only comparing it to the Zombie Dust, which I thought was really, really well balanced and smooth. This is a lot less sweet, and I feel like there's a lot more bitterness with this one than there was with the Zombie Dust. So it's kind of unfair that maybe I'm trying these back to back and directly comparing them, but I think it's a lot less balanced than the Zombie Dust.
I think the order is wrong. I think it's hard to go from a sweet beer to a more dry, hoppy beer.
Yeah.
And so this one suffers a little bit in the comparison, but I don't think it's a bad beer.
Mm-mm. It's not bad.
I think maybe this one is more drinkable and maybe it won't outlast its welcome or whatever. Whereas drinking something too sweet for too long, eventually your palate's going to grow tired of that. This is a little more crisp and drinkable.
It's definitely lighter body.
Yes.
I think the Zombie Dust had just more hops and more of a borderline pale ale IPA characteristic. This is a true like pale ale. And we sometimes get away from that. I mean, I think more and more places are making pale ales that taste like IPAs because of all the, you know, need for extra hops. And this is just goes back to like the true pale ale that a lot of us appreciate. Even though we love hops, I like to go back to this as an original pale ale style.
Yeah, it's very pale ale-esque. Like you said, it's closer to Sierra Nevada than Zombie Dust is by far.
Mm-hmm. And I think maybe in my description I gave it short shrift. I don't think this is a bad beer at all. I actually think it's very good. And ends more crisply than the Zombie Dust does.
I think
for
it's
sure.
It's lighter mouthfeel, though. Like, yeah. I almost compare it to the Surly Citra IPA, Extra IPA on the previous program, more so than the Pale Ale we just had.
I will gladly call myself out that I'm the domestic guy on the podcast. Like, I'm the Coors Light man. This is, to me, like, I mean, this is the Coors Light of, like, Pale Ales. I mean, it's like, it's just crisp and dry, and it's the things that's appealing about a domestic to me is what you get here. It's just, it's real easy to drink. It's not, no flavor you're going to go like, whoa. Like, it's just super easy to sip on.
Well said.
Hard to believe, but we're already halfway through the second half of the trip to the Midwest. When we come back, we have Ninja versus Unicorn Double IPA, and then we'll get into some darker beers, an Imperial Porter from Illinois and a Dark Belgian from Ohio. All right, if you enjoy this podcast and the Beer of the Day website and want to know how you can support us, you can do so by shopping on Amazon through the Beer of the Day website. We have a banner at the very top of the site that says support Beer of the Day by shopping on Amazon. If you click that or you go to amazon.beeroftheday.com, it'll just redirect you straight to Amazon. You do your regular shopping and then we get a little percentage of what you spend. It does not cost you anything more. The prices don't go up. It's the same old Amazon as you're used to, but we get a little bit of commission, and that helps us pay for everything that we use on this show and on the website. That's the web hosting, our email service that we use to send out the Beer of the Day emails each day, our SMS service where we send a text message with the Beer of the Day to your phone. There's all the beers that we have on the show and all the podcasting equipment. There's a ton of expenses. And by shopping on Amazon through the Beer of the Day website, you help us out a lot. For example, just today, somebody bought Hill Science Diet Jerky Dog Treat Bag, 7.1 ounces. Apparently, one of our listeners has a fat dog that needs diet jerky treats.
That was for me, actually. It's cheaper than buying regular beef jerky.
So, from that purchase, we received 24 cents. And we're going to take that 24 cents and put it towards beer on a future program. So thank you very much for that. All right, let's get back to the show. Welcome back to the Beer of the Day podcast. Next up, Ninja versus Unicorn Double IPA. So I talked about this. Well, this is from Pipeworks Brewing, by the way, Chicago. I talked about when we were in the minivan and we'd open up the back gate and things would shift during transit. And then we lost maybe four or five beers during the trip. That just fell and exploded, and then we'd have to drink them as the cans were squirting out. Well, true to form here, I was getting the beers for the next part of the show out of the refrigerator. I opened it up, and I dropped the can of Ninja versus Unicorn, and it basically, the hole in the can was small enough that it was able to spray about 10 feet, and so the entire room is just covered in beer. The floor is sticky. I think we already know what the beer smells like because you can just smell it everywhere at this point. But Ninja versus Unicorn, I luckily had another couple cans, so we opened another can, and here it is.
Another one that got kind of that light yellow golden pour with a finger or two of foamy head.
More cloudy, this one.
Yeah, a little cloudiness on it.
I can't really see my finger through it, just a shadow.
I don't know if it's because the aroma has taken over the room, like Dal mentioned, or is just very reserved, but I'm not getting a whole lot out of the glass on the nose.
I feel differently. I get a lot of aroma. There's a ton of, in my opinion, a lot of hops in this aroma that draws you in.
Yes. I agree with Jeff. I was
sticky
gonna,
hops.
Sticky for sure. Like I was going to describe the aroma as very like intensely sweet and hoppy.
Yeah. Agreed.
Mmm, that is good.
A little bit.
This is.
Go ahead.
This is one of those beers, Lance. You're familiar with this beer. This is a well-known beer, right? What should we know about this before we try it?
So this is probably one of the most highly sought-after beers. If you want to trade for something, this is something that usually comes up on Instagram a lot. Very small distribution footprint that they have. Hard to get here in California. A cult classic. Definitely difficult to get. And this is the second time that I've had it, and I understand why. This is a great beer.
I don't think they have a tap room either. I think when we were there and we were talking to the personnel there, one of the guys that was serving us let us know that they do like tap takeovers at different bars, but I don't think they have their own tap room.
Right. They take somebody else's tap room over and they serve their beer for that particular event, but they don't have their own tasting room. So we went to this place. It's a huge brewery. It's in a warehouse in a suspect area of town.
The drive-in was pretty interesting.
Interesting drive. You make sure to lock your car, and then you go inside, and everyone's running around making beer. It's a huge, huge place, and then they have this one little area cordoned off with a bar where they serve you little one thimble-filled pours of beer, and you can taste whatever beer you want. Up to two, and then buy whatever beer from there.
What were they, half an ounce tasters?
They were very, very small.
Which is actually more than what we expected, because we thought there was no tasting at all. We thought it was just like a retail store where you buy stuff to go, but we were able to taste. You could taste as many as you wanted, but they were like half an ounce each.
Posted at two.
But they would open, well, they didn't follow that because I had right. Several.
No, actually, they followed it to the letter of the law.
But even they would open cans. Like if I was thinking about buying a 4-pack, they would open a can so that I could try a little bit before I bought the 4-pack, which was pretty cool when you have limited space.
One thing I will say is for something that's so highly sought after, they had no restriction on how much you could buy. If you wanted to buy 2-3 cases, they were going to let you walk out the door. No yeah. problem.
We didn't have that much storage space though. So
I think the whole ordeal there in the parking lot was kind of interesting because you mentioned the space, and that's when we emptied out the minivan, try to make room and package everything. And so here comes the brewer as he sees us with the hundreds of beers strewn across his parking lot, and he asks us a little bit about what we're doing. So I thought that was kind of interesting when he's out there talking to us.
Yeah, I think his name was JD. He used to work at a brewery in LA. Really cool guy. Came out to just ask what we were doing, saw our minivan full of beer, and so he was really interested in the beer of the day.
So let's talk about this beer flavor-wise.
So this is, I don't know if you guys are wearing me down or if we've just had like a really good run of like pale ales and IPAs and DIPAs, but this is another, to me, like it's very well balanced. It's a little bit more bitter than I prefer, but it's hoppy. It's bitter. I can see why people like it. It's not terrible. I don't hate it.
I'll jump on that train, Britton, because we are, you know, well known to have similar beer tastes, and it's that, I mean, I don't love this beer. It's not my style that I'm gonna be like, oh, I gotta have this. But you can taste how good it is. You can taste how much love they put into making this. And I mean, there's nothing about it that I'm like, I can't drink that. It's just not something. It's not gonna be the first thing I grab. But yeah, it's good. I mean,
I feel like we're complimenting it coming from yeah. from Steve you guys, and I. Yeah. Like that's kind of.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I mean, I get like tropical hop flavors. Up front, it's pretty sweet. There's a fair amount of sweetness there, low bitterness, no booze kick at all. Whatever it says on the can, as far as alcohol goes,
it's 8%.
I think. Oh yeah,
it tastes less than that for sure. Yeah.
I also get some like melon, and maybe like bitter melon. I think there's a little bit of bitterness here, but I think I get a melon taste that reminds me of Melvin beers, and that sort of. The texture and the mouthfeel that I get from Melvin beers that I really enjoy. And you know, it's a double IPA, but it doesn't taste like 8%, like you said, but I like the melon and a little bit of tropical flavors.
Yeah. It's the tropical hops with a combination of a creme brulee and a little bit of bitterness that makes this beer have a amazing mouthfeel as well as aftertaste. I mean, it's pretty nice. It's like the dessert beer without being too sweet. It's got just great flavor.
You can definitely tell Britton and Joel are not IPA people because I get no bitterness. I think
Britton and Steve.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, Steve. Sorry.
That's okay.
But I get no bitterness. I think that this is really easy drinking double IPA. 8%, I don't feel it at all.
Yeah, the alcohol I don't taste at all, but I mean, there is some bitterness for me. I get the hops. I mean, they're prevalent for me. But Joel mentioned creme brulee. I don't know if I pick up on that exactly, but it did get me kind of this creaminess to it, mm-hmm. or like a milky quality, like on a milk stout, how it would be different than a regular stout. I almost think this could be like a milk IPA that has an appealing quality to it for me.
But I think the bitterness here is very pleasant. Like most IPA fans or double IPA fans enjoy some amount of bitterness. It's when it gets to be overly bitter that I don't think we enjoy it as much. But this has some bitterness, but it really adds to the flavor and the appeal of this beer.
I want bitterness, but I want it balanced out by something else, and this does a really good job.
Yeah, it's balanced. Yeah.
And there's a difference between the up front and the front of your tongue and the back of your throat bitterness. This has the bitterness up front. It doesn't have that long-lasting bitterness, dryness in the back of your throat that you get from some IPAs that some people don't like, that intense bitterness, but this one doesn't have that.
Agreed completely.
Yep.
Okay, well, let's move into the next beer. Oh, wait a second. The next beer is the MPH Imperial Porter from 1090 Brewing in Glenville, Illinois. I wasn't sure that we'd have a strange brew on this program, but I read the label and I said, you know what? I'm calling it.
Executive decision. I like that. What makes it strange, Dallas?
It has ingredients that are strange.
Yeah.
That was super descriptive.
Cayenne pepper and pomegranate juice in a porter.
Oh. Ooh.
Dal wanted us to find the cayenne on our own, I think, is why he didn't throw it out there.
Yeah.
He always likes to surprise us with hot things.
No, I just didn't have the bottle in front of me and couldn't remember.
So it pours very dark, like so a little chestnut at the bottom.
This is the first dark beer we've had. I mean, we had a full show of lighter golden colored beers and then more on this show. And now we finally get a dark one.
It definitely smells imperial.
It's got a, you know, Coca-Cola color, a lot of dark amber highlights peeking through on the edges. Kind of a light brown.
Yeah.
Almost reddish colored head.
So I mean, I can smell this as I'm pouring it. It's got a strong aroma.
It smells like an imperial, if that could be an aroma. That's what I would describe it. But it's also very chocolatey.
It smells alcoholic.
It's super. It smells super chocolatey to me.
Alcoholic. I get coffee liqueur, and I do get the heat from the pepper.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I get like the aroma. Dark cherry, like chocolate covered cherry aroma.
That's good. Yeah, I like that. Joel, if you need to go get a tissue, just go get it. We'll pause it.
Joel has been stricken with a sneezing attack here.
I need to take a... Will you definitely taste that cayenne?
Snot's coming out of my nose.
If you didn't take your Prilosec, you better have done so already.
I'm afraid to try it. Here I go. And I like on the bottle, it says, don't pussyfoot around. Just jump in and drink it. It's going to be hot.
Well, there's flames. Look, there's a photo of flames on the label.
Am I going to die?
No, you're fine.
You're fine. I might.
Hugo might, too.
Yeah. Whoa. Okay. There's enough cayenne bite there that it reminds me of the Breakside beer that we had where they...
Oh no, this is exact. Oh.
It's like the Breakside one where they try. You remember when they mixed the taps and they tried to tell you it wasn't the pepper beer, and you're like, there's no mistaking this freaking flavor. Like, it's a lot.
It's a dive right in. So I took a sip and I got a lot of dark cherry up front, mm-hmm. and then it just smacks you with cayenne, pepper, burning fire, Tabasco. It's really.
Very cayenne.
Quite warm on the mouth.
It's like a dry heat.
Here's the problem. This is the beer you buy to screw with your friends. Like, this is not, like, I mean, no one goes, oh, I want this beer.
Apparently people do.
You know what?
There is a market for it. I mean,
like Joel said up front, or it's like dark fruit, and that's pleasant. And then the cayenne is a little bit unpleasant. Like, it's a little bit too intense for me. But this beer has one of the better, like, very lingering aftertastes that I've had on any beer. It's very nice, like, ground coffee flavor with a little bit of chocolate. It's subtle, but it hangs around for a long time, and it's a long, long aftertaste that I really like.
The aftertaste I get is the heat. I mean, heat lingers for me.
The heat's gone for me.
The burning in the back of my throat, is still there.
So you know what the thing is? Is like, you know how beer has like the wax covering on the top and the cap? This needs to have like a wax covering and then a string that has like four Prilosec on the side of it. So as you drink it, you just pop a Prilosec as well.
You can bob for Prilosec?
Yeah.
You know,
it's not a bad tasting beer, but definitely need a tons chaser with it.
Yeah,
chaser.
Drink milk with it.
What I want to say about it is that I wish every taste could be the first taste. The problem for me with these hot beers is that every taste you take, it gets hotter and hotter and hotter.
And it keeps
ruining it for the flavor. The first sip I took, I think Dal mentioned that. You know, the chocolate cherry that Jeff could smell, and it was I got a nice chocolate and coffee. I mean, it had a really good flavor, but then every sip I take since then, it's just the heat keeps getting more and more potent. Right.
I didn't even like the first sip, and now the second and third are even worse.
Yeah.
If you're sick, it might clear your sinuses.
That's a good point.
I think Brendan was right on with the ground coffee. It tastes a bit like that, the bitterness that you get from like coffee grinds. But what's interesting is I don't really taste the pomegranate juice. Maybe the heat is so overpowering that you don't get that. But I get, for them to put that so prominently on the front of the bottle, I don't get much of the pomegranate juice.
It's in there somewhere. It's hard to detect, but I do think some of that dark fruit that I called dark cherry might be pomegranate.
It's in the front. I think it's at the very beginning.
It is a little juicy. I mean, in terms of, Britt and I drink porters a lot. I mean, you would say this has a juicy quality to it.
I don't know. It's like an old Western, like where someone gets shot in the arm and they have to pull the bullet out. Like, this is the shit you pour in your arm while you're pulling the bullet out, so it sanitizes it. Yeah.
Like, but it's complex. I mean, it's very complex. I could give you 10 different flavors that I get from this beer.
Could you give me 1090?
I agree with Jeff. I think it's super complex. I'm actually really enjoying it. The pepper is a little bit hard to like move past because it's so prominent. It's like right up front and kicking you in the face. But I actually think everybody should try this beer. It's different.
I like how they have a food pairing on the label of the bottle here.
Ice cream?
grilled ribeye or smoked brisket.
Nope, I wouldn't eat that with this.
I mean, if I made this beer again, I like the flavors. I would just cut the cayenne pepper like in half.
Yeah.
And I think it would be much more drinkable.
I have one sip of this beer left. I don't want to do it, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Dal's never poured out a beer before under the pour glass.
Joel and I don't know. Did you, wait. Mega Monster? Gilgamesh? You might have poured that one out.
Gilgamesh.
That one was terrible.
Oh,
I don't hate it. I like the complexity of it. I think that the cayenne really takes away from the fact that it's 10.8, and that actually hides the alcohol. Like, normally they use like a sugary sweetness to hide the alcohol. The pepper hides the alcohol in this, and it's actually fairly like high octane, it's not boozy. I wouldn't describe it as boozy.
It definitely hides the alcohol. Yeah. That's for sure.
I didn't even know it was 10.8.
Yeah, it's 10.8. So like the pepper does serve to hide. I actually appreciate that because normally it's like an over sweetness that would hide the alcohol, but in this case
I'd rather just have the alcohol.
Yeah.
I agree, but you're right. I did not even
it's pretty high octane.
Think about the alcohol because I was worried about the
fire
in the back of my throat.
Yeah, so that's the point that I wanted to make.
All right, well, while Lance and Hugo and Jeff and I were in Chicago drinking a bunch of beer there, Joel and Britton were in Cincinnati, not too far away from Chicago, actually, and they were able to visit a couple different breweries, but the first one we want to talk about is Rheingeist.
So Rheingeist is interesting. The over the Rhine area of Cincinnati is kind of like, it was down and out for a while and now it's back, being re-gentrified or whatever you want to say. And, it's like the new place to go in Cincinnati. It's really awesome. They're building it back up. And Rheingeist Brewery actually took over the oldest, well, they took over the building of the oldest brewery in Cincinnati, which was Moorline. So the building is from 1895. And that's the first thing that you notice, like when you go to the brewery, is the building is crazy and it's huge. It takes up probably two blocks, like two city blocks is the whole building. So you walk, you have to walk up like all these stairs. It's on like the third or fourth floor of the building. And it's how, Joel, how many people do you think were there? It was popping at Rheingeist.
And it had to be 1,000 to 1,500 people were inside the brewery. I mean, that is crazy amount of people huge. In the brewery.
Was there? Have you ever seen more at a brewery before?
No, never.
No, I've never been to a bigger brewery than that.
Even close.
Like, think of like Sierra Nevada on the scale of like the entire facility. And then think of like that being like the tasting room where everybody is. They had probably 6 to 7 things of cornhole set up with like all sorts of other games. They have a rooftop area. Like the amount of people that they can fit there is insane. And we went on a Saturday night, so it was really busy.
Right.
But it was awesome at like how huge it was.
Yeah. And Rheingeist is great. I mean, you could probably fit 2 football fields inside of that warehouse, which is also their tasting room. Which is funny to call it a tasting room, but
it's gigantic.
You know, there's a line,
aircraft hangar.
Yeah, there's a
no,
line.
Literally,
there's a line to go upstairs to a different section. That's the rooftop, and we tried a couple beers while we were there, and I've had a lot of Rheingeist beer. That's where I'm from. I went to high school there, I will tell you, it's like a club scene. Except for you're not with any club types of people. The craft brew people in general, people who like craft beers, are just chill people. You know, you see people anywhere from like 70, you know, to 21. But everybody was really chill. But it's like a destination in Cincinnati. Like, hey, we're going out Saturday night. Oh, we're going to go to Rheingeist. And that's where we're going to chill and hang out all night.
It was crazy in a good way. Like, it was overwhelmingly gigantic.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah, it was big.
So we did have the beer that we are going to...
No, don't say that.
No spoiler alerts.
Yeah, no spoiler.
Oh, I'm sorry. So yeah, and then before that, what is the brewery we went to that was probably the best unique beer experience I've had? What was that called?
So your brother-in-law, our brother-in-law, he always finds new breweries to take us to when we go to Cincinnati. So this trip, he took us to Urban Artifact, which is awesome in itself because it is in the St. Patrick's Church on the north side in Northside, Cincinnati. So the church has been around since 1895, I think. So it's really old. It's not a church anymore. So the brewery took over this whole church. It still looks like a church. It's beautiful. And there, I would describe it as like an experimental brewery. They have all sorts of crazy, crazy like beers there. So we got to try some good ones.
Yeah, they had an amazing sour selection. So I was really impressed. And there's Mad Tree Brewery in Cincinnati as well. But it's really cool to see these micro breweries and try the unique stuff they're putting out. So we were really impressed with our experience in Cincinnati.
There were 3 beers that I just wanted to mention quickly, like from Urban Artifact. The first one was the Squeeze Box, which was their strawberry sour. Joel and I would agree that it's probably one of the best beers we've ever had. Like, it was fantastic. And then there was Slide Rule, which it wasn't my favorite. It was a chocolate raspberry gosa. So that's kind of a weird combination, like a very strange brew. And it kind of went over awkwardly, I would say. Like, there, the chocolate and raspberry was there, but it was salty and like, I didn't feel like it.
Interesting though. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting, but it didn't mesh very well.
You said it was a chocolate gosa?
Chocolate raspberry gosa.
Wow.
Yeah.
That would be a strange brew.
It was odd. It was odd. And then the last one that we had was, was the Pinwheel, which was a sour gosa. And that was really good. It's probably the best gosa I've ever had.
But we were talking about this on last podcast, in the earlier half of this podcast today. And we talked about bringing growlers to your local, you know, microbrewery. And nonstop, we were there. The local neighbors would just come in, bring their growler, fill it up, and go home and drink their beer. It was nonstop people just coming in and leaving with their growlers for the day. And it was a great experience to see that micro culture in an urban area where it's being taken care of and you see a church that's going to go out of business or be demolished, and instead a brewery comes in and says, we're going to take this beautiful building and turn it into a center of culture as well as like a place where people can hang out.
It was really fun to go to.
It's a new kind of place of worship.
That's true. You know, we talk about the bubble and we talk about the future of craft beer. I think being able to have local viability where people are coming and filling their beer locally and taking it home, and it builds up that local community. Breweries like that probably have a better chance than maybe smaller to mid-sized breweries that are trying to compete on a level the same as the big, huge breweries.
Well, so, like we mentioned earlier in the show about the shelf space on the grocery stores. I mean, that's the, you know, that's how these microbreweries are going to have to get around those hurdles that the micro companies aren't going to let them get that shelf space. So what do you do? Oh, don't go to the grocery store. Come here.
I think it's the same thing like with craft breweries. I think it's kind of along the same lines. It parallels like the coffee shop explosion, mm-hmm. where the coffee shops and the small craft breweries are the glue that holds communities together. And that's where you go, and that's where everybody goes for, like, you enjoy a great beer, but there's also a sense of community there that I don't think we get that much on the West Coast. And that's what I really like going to Cincinnati for, is like that sense of community. Everybody belongs, everybody goes and enjoys the same thing. And that's what I think is really good about these small craft breweries.
That's true. But even in like in Elk Grove, there's three breweries here in Elk Grove now. I go to Flatland, I say, hey, you know, what are you working on? What's coming up new? And it does keep that very small thing, a lot of growler pours. And I think that's happening all over the place. So that's definitely a positive aspect of the where craft beer is headed right now.
Yep.
So you guys went to Rheingeist. And we have a Rheingeist beer that we got from Tavor. A lot of the beers we've had tonight we brought back from our trip, but a few of them we got on Tavor. And if you want to buy beer on Tavor, you can go to tav.beertheday.com or Tavor, tavour.beertheday.com. You sign up, we're going to get $10 or $15 or some $20. I don't know what it is, but it's kind of a cool service. They ship the beer to you once a month, and they feature probably two or three beers a day. If you like the beer, you say, put it in my box. They put it in your box, they charge you for it, and then at the end of the month, they ship it to you straight to your house. Just yesterday, I was at Joel's house. They were out swimming. I was the only person in the house, and the doorbell rang. I went and opened the door. The guy's like, are you 21? Yes. Okay, sign here. I signed there. I got the box, and then I went out, and I looked through the glass window and pointed at the box to Joel, and his face lit up like a child on on Christmas morning.
Yeah, it did.
And so we had a bunch of beers yesterday, and it's like that every month with Tavor. So a lot of the beers that we get on this podcast that we can't get in California, like we talked about Toppling Goliath last week on the show, and we were able to get Pseudo Sue from Tavor before we even went to Iowa. So it's definitely a good service, and you can help us out by signing up through Beer of the Day, tav.beertheday.com. Mastodon. This is the beer from Rheingeist. It is a Belgian-style dark ale, 9.8%.
So it pours like kind of a light brown. It's actually fairly see-through, maybe slightly cloudy.
I'd call it like it's a little brown highlights, but it's kind of like a deep, like ruby red color.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like auburn maybe.
Yeah.
With reddish tint. Yeah, for sure.
And it's got a tan khaki colored head, not super dark, but like a tan colored foamy head.
It had a real good cascade on it when we poured it. The aroma on this was so great. I mean, even just from the bottle when Joel was pouring them, I was getting a nice whiff of the aroma.
It's the dark fruit, fig.
It's the Belgian candy.
Belgian candy.
Very strong yeast. Ripe banana.
Ripe banana.
Oh, yeah.
Well said. Yeah.
It's just a classic Belgian ale aroma, but more than that. It's like it's more aromatic than your classic Belgian.
And coming in at 9.8%, this is not something just to scoff at. I mean, you're gonna have to
work at it.
You're gonna have to work at it, and it's a great winter beer.
I mean, 9.8 is definitely in the Belgian double, bordering on triple type of alcohol content.
You'd be great on this 103 Sacramento degree day today.
I know. <huh?
laughs> That's what air conditioning's for. But yeah, I get, Hugo mentioned the banana in the aroma. I get a lot of banana on the taste. But it's sweet. Like, I don't know what it is. Like, it's the dark fruit sweetness that you get in a lot of Belgian doubles is really apparent here.
It's funny. I mean, I'm going to say creamy, but even on top of that, I mean, banana cream, but then like if you could get the flavor of ice cream without the cold, you know, like just that flavor. It's like banana ice cream.
I actually think it tastes a little bit like Bananas Foster, like where you have like the flambéed bananas mm-hmm. with yeah. a little bit of like booziness.
The caramelization
in it.
Of it too.
Yeah. That's super pleasant. We didn't want to spoil it, but this is the one that I chose when we were at Rheingeist, and I feel like it tastes different out of the bottle. It's very much more, we really, really had to work at it at the brewery. And I feel like it may have, I don't know if it bottle conditioned a little bit better or something, like it mellowed a little bit from what we had at the brewery, and it's much more enjoyable here than what we had when we were there.
I had 16 ounces of this at Rheingeist.
No,
and
I did.
No, Britton did. And I had to finish it for her, but that was also my fourth beer of the night. So, I mean...
Yeah, and we had Rheingeist was our last stop, so we had to work at it. But I feel like it's mellowed a little bit.
I'm interested to see what you guys down in LA think about this Pasadena. Sorry, what you guys think of this beer?
I enjoy it. I mean, Belgian doubles are the style of Belgian beers that I enjoy the most, and I like the balance between the malts and the sweetness. Sometimes they're too sweet. And this definitely has some sweetness, but it's not too sweet. But I like the fruitiness and the candy flavors. I think it's a tasty beer. I'd have a hard time drinking the whole bottle myself, but I think to share among friends, it's a tasty, interesting beer.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I definitely do get that banana Foster's flavor that somebody mentioned. It was you get those caramel notes and. I enjoy it. It's good.
Well, they have a barrel-aged version of this, which maybe we'll have this on a future podcast. I'm interested to see how it turns out when it's in the barrel. I'm not sure what kind of barrels they use, but it's a pretty smooth beer like this. And so, you know, it's not hot, you know, it's not alcoholic or boozy. So I don't know how it's going to be barrel-aged. Usually that changes the beer a lot. I would love to try the barrel aged version of this.
So Joel and I just had a collective realization that the one that we had at the brewery was the barrel aged one.
Oh, so that's why it's so much different.
Yeah. So it was a little tough.
Of course, those ones age better. I mean, that's the reason. I mean, I have both of them in the fridge right now, and Jeff and I decided to just do this one because we want to age the barrel one for, you know, another 6 months to a year.
So I would hope that the barrel aged one, let it mellow because, it's a little bit tough. It's very boozy. It's a lot more, I would say like the dried fruit. And that's like the thing that I think I'm enjoying about this bottle is that I didn't get the banana at all. Like there was no banana, there was no caramel. It was like, very pronounced like dried fruit boozy.
Was it like bourbon barrels or something?
Yeah.
So that would
imbibe
this bottle bourbon.
This bottle says it has peach and apricot. I mean, are you guys getting that? I mean,
I was thinking there was a little something more than banana that I was getting. You know, I don't know if I was chalking that up to that creaminess I mentioned, but I didn't pick those flavors out. I can totally go for that now that you said it though.
I'd say banana is the main character. In this story. But it's interesting that you said the banana was very reserved in the barrel-aged one. So it'll be interesting to try that one, you know, a couple.
I would recommend to let that one mellow.
Maybe in the wintertime.
Yeah.
But I mean, in terms of like what a good Belgian always does to me is that, yeah, we were saying it's 9.8. It's going to hit you. It doesn't. I mean, yeah, I mean, you know, it's alcoholic, but you're not like, holy crap, I can't drink this. It's
overwhelmingly boozy.
Anytime you have a well-crafted Belgian, I mean, they do a good job hiding the alcohol, and I think that's what we get here.
That's really funny that we forgot it was barrel-aged, the one that we had.
I always like to know what Belgians do to Steve.
Oh, yeah. they take me to places I rarely go.
I was thinking the same thing.
That Belgian banana.
All right. Well, that's the last beer we have for tonight. So how about, Britton, you recap the beers we've had, and then we'll figure out what our favorite beer of the day is.
Alrighty. So this episode took us all over the United States, well, mostly the Midwest. But we started off with a citrus wheat beer from Old Bakery Beer Company out of Alton, Illinois. Then we jumped to Zombie Dust Pale Ale from Three Floyds in Munster, Indiana. We had the Daisy Cutter Pale Ale from Half Acre in Chicago. We went to the Ninja versus Unicorn Deepa from Pipeworks Brewing in Chicago, the MPH Imperial Porter from 1090 in Glenview, Illinois, and we finished off the night with the Mastodon from Rheingeist Brewery out of Cincinnati, Ohio.
All right, Joel, the wheel's right there. You want to give that a spin? A little harder. There you go. Steve is up first tonight.
I kind of am glad I'm going first. I wanted to go first because I know I'm the only person who's going to pick this one. I want to say the Mastodon was really good. I appreciated the Ninja vs. Unicorn, and I think those are going to be the popular answers. My favorite beer of the day was the Daisy Cutter. It had, like I mentioned at the time, I'm the domestic drinker. It had this dryness and crispness to it that I really enjoyed, and I could drink that. I had no problem drinking that beer, and I would have it again.
Well, I agree with you on that, but my favorite beer of the day is Ninja versus Unicorn Double IPA. You know, we set the bar in the previous episode with the King Sioux. I was a big fan of that one, and I didn't really think it would be topped for me, but Ninja versus Unicorn did top it. It had so much great flavor, hoppiness, just enough bitterness initially, but then it doesn't linger in the aftertaste. You can't really taste the alcohol at all to speak of. It wasn't even as sweet as the King Sioux. So the sweetness was a little more reserved,
understatement,
a little bit more dry. Great beer. Really enjoyed that one. My favorite beer of the day, Jeffrey.
I agree with Dallas. Ninja versus Unicorn was definitely one of the better beers tonight, but I'm going to go with the Zombie Dust. And my reasoning for this sort of goes back to this trip. I mean, we were on a 1 week vacation to all kinds of breweries, and like New England style, Northeast style IPAs are all the rage right now, and all these hazy beers. And it was really nice to go to these breweries and this part of the country where pale ales are still king. And you know, I mentioned it before that, you know, the flagship beer at most of these breweries is a pale ale. And I really enjoyed the Zombie Dust, the, you know, just the, how well balanced it was. I'm a big IPA fan to go back to like a high quality pale ale that's a little on the hoppy side. I enjoyed that a lot. And I'm going to go with the Three Floyds Zombie Dust just because of the flavor profile. I truly enjoyed that.
You know, I like it better than Sierra Nevada Pale Ale. I like it better than Mirror Pond. I think it's a very great pale ale. Hugo's turn.
I think the Zombie Dust was very representative of the whole trip. All these pale ales, like Jeff said. It was really good beer, but I still from California. I like the IPAs, and I think hands down the Ninja versus Unicorn Double IPA is my favorite.
Sir Lancelot.
So I have to go with the Ninja versus Unicorn. The tropical notes that come through on it, how well balanced it is, drinkability. It's something that I look for. It's kind of akin to the Sip of Sunshine from Lawson's that I really, really like. It's something special, and I understand why it's so highly sought after. So it's definitely going to be my beer of the day.
So I had a tie between Zombie Dust and Mastodon. I rated them both very highly. I am going to go with the Zombie Dust Pale Ale because it is the one out of the two that, like, I think Mastodon is more my style in general. That's the type of beer that I like. That's the one that I would want to drink. So I'm going to pick the Zombie Dust because it's not my style, and I really liked that beer. I thought it was very well balanced. It was hoppy, but it was sweet, and it was super smooth. So Zombie Dust Pale Ale is my beer of the day.
So I didn't have a bad beer today except for one that I regretted, which was the MPH, which wasn't bad. I just regretted it. but if I had to choose a beer of the day, and it was hard, I would choose the Ninja versus Unicorn Deepa. So it's fruity. It's got a milky taste, like milky mouthfeel, and that slight caramel flavor. It was a great beer.
Completely agree. I think we had a lot of good beers tonight. I'm glad we were only going to pick one beer for the two episodes, but we split it up to episode to episode. I think that's a good bet because it's hard to pick between the two episodes what's your favorite one. So might as well just pick the one out of the six, and that's fine. All right, well, before we go, I just wanted to remind everybody that each day at Beer of the Day, we feature a different beer as the beer of the day. That beer gets sent out to all of our followers on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and it gets a lot of exposure. And the reason we take these beercations, so we did the Midwest trip, is to try beer in that part of the country. I think the whole trip, there was, of the 25 breweries we went to, there was just one brewery that I had previously. Everything was new. So that just shows you that how rare it is to be able to try beer in different parts of the country, even though we do our best to try and try beer from all over the country. So wherever you live, it's very possible that the beer that you get there and you enjoy there, we don't get to experience the rest of the United States. So you can post that beer as the beer of the day, and everyone around the country is going to be able to get a little slice of what beer is like in your area. And I think that's important. And I want to encourage more participation by the beer of the day audience to share beers. So to do that, you just go to beeroftheday.com, upper right hand corner, you click add beer. You write a description, type in the name of the beer, pick the brewery, upload a picture. It takes about 10 minutes. It's very easy to do. And then we will feature that as the beer of the day. And then everybody that follows Beer of the Day will be able to see that beer and you know, get to enjoy it through your experience with it, which is cool. If you do that, we will send you a super cool Beer of the Day pint glass. They're very rare. Not too many people have them. You're going to really enjoy it. So post a beer of the day, get the beer of the day pint glass. We will thank you for that. And that's going to close out the Midwest show. It was split over 2 weeks, but we just had 12 beers here in a row. And so many good ones. It was a good time.
I don't think there was a bad beer in this bunch.
Yeah, maybe one or two.
I liked them all. That's unusual.
Well, it was a trip for sure. It was a trip on the podcast. It was a trip on the trip itself. Definitely a lot of fun. We'll be back in a couple of weeks. We're going to take a little beer break. We've had a lot, so
we need to work out.
Yeah, work out some of this beer weight. But on our next show, we'll have something good for you. I assure you of that.
And we'll be 10 pounds lighter.
Hopefully.
We'll see you next time. For Jeff Miller, Hugo Padilla, Lance Burks, Britt Miner, Joel Miner, Steve Williamson, I'm Dallas Hollicker. We'll see you next time right here on the Beer of the Day podcast.